Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts. It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your best seller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside. Inside of You is brought to you by Netflix. Battle Creek, Michigan, 1963. Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, race to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A wildly imaginative tale of ambition, betrayal, and menacing milkmen, sweetened with artificial ingredients. Unfrosted stars Jerry Seinfeld in his directorial debut. It features a supporting cast of comedy greats, including Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer, Max Greenfield, Christian Slater, Sarah Cooper, Bill Burr, and many more. Friday, May 3rd, only on Netflix. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Man, this interview came up with like a 15-hour notice. A friend of mine who's a publicist, this actor who came on the show today, his publicist, I was like, do you want this person? And I was like, are you effing kidding me? He's promoting a movie. I'm like, are you effing kidding me? Yesterday, I said, Ryan, Crispin Glover is going to be on the podcast. And you were supposed to work all day.
I was. I flipped some things around because I did not want to miss it.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't miss it. You know, sometimes I'm a little nervous in the beginning. But he's so articulate, which is a little unnerving sometimes because, you know, people are, you know, but he's not condescending. He's just a smart guy who's articulate and is passionate about art and passionate about, you know, we talked about Werner Herzog and documentaries, and we talked about, which is really fun, we talked about Back to the Future. And obviously he's got this lawsuit, you know, when you're dealing with studios or dealing with people in general, you know, directors, sometimes you just speak your mind and you take a chance because you're like, this isn't right. And he does that. And he also talks about the thing that happened on the Letterman show. If you guys don't know that, maybe watch Crispin Glover on Letterman. Letterman walked off stage, talks about that. I don't want to give too much away, which I'm doing, but his new movie, Lucky Day. And it really looks good. And Roger Avery, who co-wrote Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, right? And all this stuff. And so it's like, I think it's going to be good. I can't wait to see it. Before we get into Crispin Glover, check out the Inside of You handle, my handle on Twitter and my Twitter, and see where I'm going to be for conventions and all that stuff. And Left on Laurel, you know, the album's out, all that jazz. And In Love with Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan is out, so make sure you subscribe. We appreciate you. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you for listening. And here, let's get inside of Crispin Glover.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You. Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
We're starting.
I'm into it.
You are. Have you done a lot of podcasts?
I have done some. I went on Mark Maron's couple of years ago, which was great.
He's got a big following.
Yeah, he's good. He's got a, so you've got a Saturn Award.
I do. You're like me, ADD. There. I do have a Saturn. Why, do you have one?
No, I was nominated for it twice, I think, but I never
for
won.
For what? Willard?
For Willard and for Back to the Future.
But you didn't win?
I didn't win.
Who beat you?
I don't know.
You don't care.
I don't remember.
Do you worry about that stuff? Do you care when someone beats you when you're not?
I very rarely get nominated. I have won some awards.
What awards have you won?
I won, well, interestingly, what I actually won awards for was my filmmaking. I won awards for my filmmaking before acting, which I'm fine with. I have no problem with that. Although then Ann Arbor Film Festival, which is the oldest experimental film festival in the U.S., my first film, What Is It, won Best Narrative Film. The reason it was in that category is because, you know, filmmakers like Stan Brakhage, who genuinely make non-narrative, beautiful art films, would premiere his films at that film festival. So they had a narrative, award, which my film won, which I was happy about because people would sometimes say the film isn't narrative. But indeed, my first film, What Is It, is narrative.
Where do you keep the award, by the way? Do you look at it, or is it like an?
It's just a plaque. I think I won some money, actually.
What?
Interestingly enough,
money.
Not a huge. It was Lawrence Kasdan sponsored it. I think I won.
Lawrence Kasdan?
Yeah.
You mean Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, yeah. It was Lawrence. Like that. For some reason, that Jeez. Award was named after him. I think he might have donated money to the festival or something like that. But then that film also won an award at the Sitges Film Festival, and then my second film won an award at the Sitges Film Festival.
So you play music, you made a music album, you direct, you write, you have, I don't know how many books, you got a new book you're working on.
That's right,
You're an actor. I mean, you keep trying things because you get bored? Because that's what I do.
No, it's not necessarily about being bored. I just genuinely, most of the books that I published, well, in fact, all the books I published really were books I made mostly in the 80s and very early 90s. There are old books taken from the 1800s and reworked and turned into different books from what they originally were. Now, amazingly, I still I tour with those books. I've published five of those altogether, four of which are in print. But I have a live show that I perform before my films. The live shows are an hour long each. There's two different shows. There's eight different books in each of the shows. And I dramatically narrate the books. They're heavily illustrated and the images are projected behind me.
You like theater. You like live.
I mean, by far, most of my work has been, you know, in front of a camera. I've done some theater, but the show that I do is theatrical.
Do you get nervous?
No, I've done it. So I could do it right this second. And
jump into one thing. Go.
Rat catching.
Perfect. You know it by heart. You get up there. You look forward. You get that buzz, that not that nervous feeling, but that I'm excited. I can't wait.
There is something about performing in front of an audience. Yeah.
And especially if they're there to see you and you know what they're there to see.
I like performing the show. It is time consuming. Everything surrounding it, going and setting up the show, traveling to the show, checking into the hotel, all these kind of things take time. If I could just snap my fingers rat catching, studies in the art of rat catching for the use of schools, chapter one.
What's the Latin word for rat?
I don't know.
I think it's ratus nor vegetus or
is
something.
Is it? Oh, okay.
I just remember that because I know Ryan's looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about?
But there's Latin, I don't even know.
I've never taken Latin. I don't know Latin. I don't know any. I remember a guy in drama class in high school get up there and go, I am ratus nor vegetus. I'm sitting in some shithead. I don't know. I think I could be wrong. People are probably listening.
Sounds
but I just
right.
remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
Ratus nor. It's too easy, though, isn't it? Ratus nor vegetus.
It's probably where we get the word rat, if it's so.
I think so.
Yes.
I keep thinking about you reading these old books to then. Yeah. First of all, reading a book for me is alone. That's really difficult.
Well, but also they're very heavily illustrated. So virtually every page has illustrations on it.
Ooh.
So it isn't just me reading, but there's also a visual component. I can see what people are looking at while I'm performing the show. I'm in a red spotlight. Some people are looking at me, but often people are looking at the the images that are being projected.
But I'm talking about the old books that you sort of transcribe,
that's
right?
That's what I'm talking about.
So, oh, okay.
They're not transcribed. Some of them don't even use any of the original text at all. Rat Catching is one that uses a lot of the original text. That's the one that feels most like the original book. But there's some that I use virtually no words from the original book, and it's more about just the images. All of the books are different from each other.
You dress up a lot, don't you?
Especially if I'm, doing media, I'll wear a suit.
I guess this is me. You know what? I'm going to tell you something, Chris. This is the truth. Ask Ryan. I usually don't shower. It's not that I'm filthy. I just wake up, I throw on a t-shirt and my hat and my shorts.
Yeah.
And Alex, who's a publicist at your firm.
Yeah.
Let me know. Is it fun? He's a great guy. You're going to love him. I go, okay, cool. He wears a suit. He always looks sharp. And I go, oh, shit. Oh, shit. No, no, no. So you know what? You're looking at me with jeans.
I'm wearing
pants today.
But it's normal. For whatever reason, I've always felt like doing media, it's proper to wear a suit. If I'm traveling or something, I don't wear a suit.
Do you like media? Do you like being interviewed?
Yeah, I especially like it for my own projects, or if there's a project I like. I'm enjoying, I really liked working with Roger on...
Roger Avery on Lucky Day.
On Lucky Day, so... And I like talking about my own films as well, so I'm fine with it. Years and years ago, I was much less comfortable with it, but I'm more comfortable with it now.
I think people... And they do this. I mean, when I played Lex Luthor, people assume I'm going to be this dark, intense character who wears Armani suits. And then they find out I have T-shirts, Atari T-shirts, and drive a Volkswagen bus or a van. I'm not that guy. I'm not that smart. So people probably look at you and go, oh, he plays these intense, weird roles. Is he this weird guy?
That's absolutely so.
And do you like the mystery of it all?
It doesn't really bother me. The only thing... I am writing a regular book right now that's not taken from the old books, one that I've just written.
Is this about the films, the propaganda?
Yes. And on some level, part of why I'm writing it, there's this one producer named Bob Gale. I don't want to go into too much about it, but I just see where sometimes people take an advantage, like Bob Gale, of utilizing a persona to their advantage, as opposed to me. You knowing that they can take my persona and go, oh, this guy's whatever, and then he stole something from me. He did something that was illegal.
What was that?
Well, there was a lawsuit in Back to the Future.
Right, because
they took.
They put prosthetics on another actor.
Yeah, they took the molds of my face from the original film that was used to make the old age makeup, and then they made prosthetics from my features and put it onto a different actor's face in order to fool audiences.
And used some guy to do your voice, right?
Well, yeah, he did an imitation of me, and it was illegal. You are not allowed to do that. It's yes, my lawsuit set precedence, but it was completely illegal.
Yeah, changed SAG rules and did all that stuff.
Yeah,
so
but even despite that, it was totally illegal.
You saw that, the first time you heard about it, did you see it?
I went to the see the movie. I went on the opening day to see it. I was in a regular paying audience. I did not know before that moment that's what was happening. So of course it was a very very uncomfortable thing to...
Who are you watching the movie with when you
myself.
See Back to the Future 2? You went to yourself just to check it out because Robert Zemeckis,
because
directed.
I knew something. I was curious what had happened. I was under the impression that another actor is playing the part, which was fine with me. Had that been the case,
you can't do anything about that.
That would have been fine. And,
right.
I, and nor would I have wanted to do anything about that. That I would have been totally happy. There would be never a word about it again. Fine. That isn't what happened. And when I saw what had happened, it was very bad.
Did you go into, the only thing I could think of is somebody walking into the bathroom after or during the movie and seeing you and they're breaking a mirror.
I sat in the front row and I just kind of had my hands on my head like this, with my head down,
like,
waiting for
the film.
Like,
you didn't want people to even see you. Like,
people did see me and noticed a bit, but I was actually in Salt Lake, Utah when it happened.
Did they think it was you?
I think so, but I just kept my head. I went in very shortly before the film started and just kept my head like that, and then watched the film.
And then afterwards, you called your lawyer and said, this
isn't
right.
No, I didn't have a lawyer. No, I contacted Screen Actors Guild. Screen Actors Guild then found legal representation. Everybody knew it was outrageous.
So I hope you won some money from this.
Well, the funny thing is there is an agreement. This is another reason I'm mad at Bob Gale. There was a settlement agreement, which I've always been very careful to stay true to. And what I'm supposed to say in the settlement agreement is that it was settled with mutual satisfaction. Everybody was supposed to stick to that. Bob Gale cannot take that he did something illegal. He doesn't like that there's any kind of question that he could have possibly done anything wrong. So what he's done is, you know, it's literally what a criminal will do when they've done something to a person is they'll blame the victim of their crime. Well, Bob Gale did something illegal. He blames me. And so it really does drive me crazy. He's been doing it for decades now. It's just wrong. You do not do something that's illegal and then blame the person for your illegal action.
So what does he say? Oh, the studio cleared it. They said it was fine.
Well, he'll do so many mental gymnastics in order. I wish somebody would really publicly question him. But, you know, he has the platform of being the producer of the DVD. So he goes on these DVDs and says whatever he wants. And then people believe it. And he just makes up an incredible amount.
Well, all you wanted, it sounds like, if he called you up and said, "I'm really sorry about everything that happened."
I would certainly appreciate if he did that in public. He should do that in public. I mean, he's been publicly for literally decades now. And he keeps just every 5 years when they have something new to sell, he keeps going on the bar higher. And that's what made me start to say. So this last time, he broke the settlement agreement. I sent a cease and desist letter to his lawyer. It cost me money to send the cease and desist letter. You know, essentially, he'll take all credit when there's something good, but no, he wasn't even the producer or it had nothing to do with him when there's some actual blame of something that he really did do that was illegal.
Do you know how many, you know, it's funny, I could think of, this is about you. I'm not bringing it back to me.
Yeah,
but I am in a way. When I played that role, Lex Luthor, on the show, when I left, they started to have an actor who was actually my
double
stand-in, my double. Thank you, Ryan. He's there for articulation.
Right.
They would show him. They would his back, his head. You know, doing all these things. Many episodes.
Yeah.
And I think they hired another actor. They made it appear like, I don't think he ever said anything, but people were like, "Dude, you came back. Oh my God, that's awesome." I'm like, "No, I didn't."
Well, that sounds sort of like Dick York and on Bewitched, there were two actors that played the same role. But again, that's legal.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They're hiding my face. They're not showing my face, and they're not talking like me.
Right.
They're just showing that this character that created that I'm not on a show anymore, he's still alive.
Yeah, that's legal.
Yeah.
Where it is not legal is to physically take the prosthetics. Also, part of the lawsuit was that they were calling the person that played me not by the character name, but by my name, and making derisive jokes and things on the set.
You know what probably drives you crazy? It drives me crazy hearing this, is you probably have so much admiration and love for this franchise, or at least the first, you know, the first installment.
No, I don't have incredible love.
Did you at first before this happened?
Oh yeah,
what I'm saying.
I put everything into it. I wanted to do a good job in it.
That never happened in the second one,
if there was never a second film, I'd be at the reunion smiling, happy.
You'd be at all these conventions signing.
Of course, I'd be very happy. There would be no problem whatsoever.
Isn't that something? Because you probably had no issues with the actors, right?
Absolutely not. No, they were all great. I never have problems with actors. I mean, and in fact, I didn't even, there were minor things that I've talked about because I know what it blew up into, but it's the kind of thing that had this lawsuit never happened because of stealing my face, and other stuff, not just right. my face, but it's the kind of stuff, you know, you wouldn't talk about at all, but mm-hmm. it's blown up, particularly by Bob Gale, out of proportion.
And that's why you're writing this book about propaganda in films?
It's not the only reason, but there are multiple things I'm writing about in the book.
Would you consider other propaganda, like some would say, like Oliver Stone's version on JFK or Tarantino's version of the latest movie?
Well, it's a complicated issue. Propaganda isn't just... I've written 450 pages on it, so...
That sounds like six books for me.
Say it again?
That's six books for me, with color pages. No, that's good. That's a lot.
I'll probably edit things down. I have to go through editing. But the subject matter is propaganda within the U.S. film industry. But even the word propaganda, it didn't originally have the negative connotation that we have with it now. Essentially, it's the art of persuasion. The negative connotation, I would say, part of what the main element in the book has to do with is corporate interests that make people believe something that it seems like it's good for the people, when in fact it's really good for corporate interests,
right.
Not good for the people. And that's all over our entertainment media. And it's not really heavily talked about. I'm very happy to see that something having to do with the internet, it is something that people are starting to discuss more.
Yeah.
And I see people discussing it in politics and news media, which is positive. My first film, What Is It?, was very much reacting to this. And I came out with that in 2005, or I premiered in Sundance in 2005. I actually started shooting it in 96. So the ideas in it really are very old. When I first started touring with it, even in 2005 in the U.S., and I started talking about propaganda in U.S. entertainment, people in the audience, I could just immediately tell, were like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with
it's
you?
Brave.
But I'd go up to Canada, and they knew exactly what I was talking about. Anywhere outside of the United States, and people knew exactly what I was talking about. Not in the U.S., but that I've seen that start to change now, and it has something to do with the internet. Just that people, you know, podcasts like this are important.
Yeah.
And just the kind of talk that is not being...
communicated.
Well, now it's being communicated because it's not so corporate.
Right.
Which is, it is positive. It's important. And it's important.
You know, I keep thinking, you know, I go to these conventions sometimes to sign autographs and the fans love it. And it's just, they're, you know, and I see sometimes the Back to the Future guys, you know,
yeah.
and, Michael J. Fox and, you know, Christopher Lloyd. And like you said, you got along with those guys. Great. So obviously the studio has nothing to do with it. I'm being selfish now for
fans. Has nothing to do with what?
With the sense that, you know, these actors are individually invited to come do like a Back to the Future signing.
Right.
So
right.
what I'm of course insinuating is, gosh, why don't you go? Boy, would that be fun.
Well, the reason I don't go to those is because of the lawsuit for Back to the Future, or less than the lawsuit, but because of the sequels, essentially if I go to those, I'm promoting the use of my face, of stealing of my face. I know it doesn't seem like that.
I know what you're saying. You're saying that if you do that, they're going to go, oh, well, he didn't care. Now he's making money.
Exactly.
So it's okay for him. Completely.
Yeah, I can never do those.
Right.
But I tour around with my own shows and films.
Right.
I used to sign everything absolutely for free. I have my books, of course, that I sign. But I had an incident. In fact, somebody uploaded it. Weird, aggressive, like, autograph people came to one of my shows and got really aggressive with me to, like, sign stuff. And it was strange. I was, like, surrounded.
How do you react to that? What did you do?
It's online. I mean, the thing that's funny about it is I think I come off very well. I'm actually really reasonable and explaining to
them. What are they saying? Sign this. Come on, dude.
It's that part of it's off camera, but you can tell that's what I'm reacting to.
And you're getting worked up.
Not too worked up, but I think I come up very... Everybody that's made a comment, it's funny because they all say negative things about the guy who uploaded it. They're not saying anything negative about me because I'm being completely reasonable. But ever since that, I now I do charge except for my books. I sign my books for free, but anything outside of that, it's just become too much of a business. And it also is slowing the line down. It just got to the point where it's like, fine, if somebody really, really wants to pay a lot of money for their, you know, whatever particular collectible that they're having to sign, I'll do it. I felt strange about doing it, but it just got to the point where it was taking too much time and causing too much issue, essentially, to not do that.
But what if somebody said, Crispin, come for the weekend. Back to the Future folks aren't here. It's just you. You're going to be signing at a table.
Well, what I've done is I think it's happened twice. I'll do the same show that I do at movie theaters, if they do it within my complete show within the confines of the convention, which includes a signing. I do a 1 hour live performance, then I show the feature film. One of them 72 minutes, the other one 74 minutes. Then I have an hour and a half Q&A, and then I have the book signing. But the thing is those conventions are a business as well. So for them, it's a hassle. So most of them won't do that.
We don't want to do all those things.
Yeah, they just want you sitting there and
signing as much as you can.
That's what they want.
That's very true.
Yeah, yeah.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
I look at your career, and I was really excited about this. I've had a lot of people here, and, you know, I wouldn't say I get excited. Sometimes I'm like, oh, that's cool. They're cool. Or, you know, but with you, I even called a couple friends.
Oh, well, thank you.
And they were just like, dude, are you kidding me? I mean, it's always that. I mean, even Ryan, this is true. I'm not bullshitting you.
Yeah.
Ryan, what did you have today?
Oh, I had another job, and I had...
Where?
Oh, where in Santa Monica.
Right. Yeah. The whole day booked to make money. Booked. More money than I pay you.
Oh,
thanks for bringing that up.
Well, you brought it up.
So anyway, what happened? I said, hey, Crispin Glover's coming tomorrow.
He said, Crispin Glover's coming tomorrow. So I left yesterday. And I planned my day around it because it was very exciting.
You had to do it. I mean, you obviously have fans. I mean, you're a big Hot Tub Time Machine.
That was my favorite running gag. In the,
oh, good. I had a good time making that film.
I didn't watch that movie because I didn't get cast. Sometimes when sure. I don't get the role. Do you ever do that?
I don't really care. In fact, sometimes I'll watch movies if there's something that I've had some kind of interest or offer for. You do have to grow a relatively thick skin, so to speak, at a young age to... I mean, that's just normal. It's like, it's normal that otherwise I'd be in every movie that was cast.
I saw Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
I saw the movies that I didn't get cast. And of course, like those, but some movies you're like for instance, Willard.
Yeah.
If you, for some reason, didn't get cast in Willard, do you think you would have seen it?
It all depends. I mean, probably not, but not because I didn't get cast, just because it wouldn't be on my...
Your taste, a genre maybe.
Yeah, I mean, these days I almost never see movies. I used to see movies all the time, and I almost never do. Sometimes I spend time in New York. Last year I was in New York a lot, and I did go see a whole bunch of movies at MoMA that, you know, like Martin Scorsese had curated a series, and that was really enjoyable. But seeing contemporary films, that's really, really rare for me these days.
So are you a doc? You like documentaries?
There's some really good documentaries.
What's your favorite documentary?
I'll just say Buñuel's documentary, Land Without Bread, just because I love Buñuel. I'm sure, well, Herzog's made some great documentaries.
I was just going to say Werner
Fata Morgana is fantastic.
Grizzly Man.
Grizzly Man was great. In fact, I premiered my film, What Is It, in Sundance the same year that Werner Herzog was premiering Grizzly Man. And I had actually shown a rough cut of What Is It to Werner Herzog. And then I went and saw Grizzly Man. He came and saw the premiere of What Is It. And he was great.
Crispin, What Is It?
Yeah.
This movie is so great.
That's good.
I really sincerely think you're a filmmaker. Perhaps we could do something together.
What was interesting about it, you know, he's been literally making films since before I was born.
Oh, yeah.
And at the show, he was there's some video footage. Somebody's been making a documentary about my filmmaking for a while. And there's video footage of Werner Herzog asking me questions about how I made certain things in the film, which is, you know, I'm a huge admirer of his.
Supposedly, well, he lives not far from me, like a couple blocks over.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I walk by his house sometimes. I've never seen him, but one of my friends said that he got so pissed because people were partying till late hour, and he came out there yelling and said, "What the? Get up! What the? It's 2 a.m. What are you doing here?" And he's such a calm guy. I can't imagine him screaming. Yeah. I would have paid for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because he's, you know, famously the My Best Fiend, where he's talking about Klaus Kinski and the Indians or the Native Americans or Native South Americans were saying that they would. They were more afraid. This was Herzog's self-report in My Best Fiend, that they were more respectful and or afraid of Herzog because he was quiet, whereas Kinski was loud, which meant he wasn't.
Isn't that something? Like, I always feel like that I'm kind of a loud personality. Ryan, would you agree?
100%.
Thank you. But I can be loud, and I look at you, and you're reserved. You're kind of humble, and you're not that I'm not humble, but I think when people when you yell, when you're just, they don't take you as seriously.
Yeah.
So when you're this quiet, mild-mannered guy, and he says, "You, the people listen to quiet people." I think that's the theory, isn't it?
Probably. I mean, I'm not always calm. I wish I was.
What do you freak out about? What's the one thing that you go?
Corporate tyranny really makes me crazy.
I noticed that. Yeah. Ryan, did you notice that? You were intense in a way that it's not intensity; it's passion. You're very passionate about.
I think there's something truly out of balance with how we have allowed corporate tyranny to control things, and then also the, which is also why the propaganda aspect is important to me, because it does influence how people think and then treat each other, and people, you know, easily will get subsumed into an ideology that you can clearly tell has to do with a kind of propaganda, some element of propaganda that's become the norm. But that there are complexities to that, where which kind of propaganda is being put forth, what ideology is put forth and why, it gets complicated.
What do you think about what Martin Scorsese said about Marvel films?
Somebody asked me that the other day, and in terms of this exact topic, I think the word cinema that he used was a little problematic, because anything that you put up on a screen can be called a cinema, quite literally. But I would say what he's really reacting to is corporate propaganda. I haven't seen most of those comic book movies. But my sense is, you know, the original comics that they're based on were originated in the 1930s and 40s during World War II, which was really to make children feel comfortable with the wars that were going on, or the war that was going on at that time. So now it's been upgraded to adults, essentially, to do that same thing, to make the U.S. citizens feel comfortable. It's metaphorical, but generally to feel comfortable with the idea that the U.S. is a moral police state of the rest of the world. People in the U.S. believe that. People outside of the U.S. do not. They clearly
see that. But there's always been that. There's always been,
sure,
to a degree. I mean, there's always
movies. Well, it's been there for a long time. How long has it been that people in the U.S. believe that the U.S. is this moral police force? I don't think, I'm kind of forgetting my U.S. history now, but I believe that it was under Teddy Roosevelt was when the U.S. first became imperialistic, meaning doing anything outside of U.S. grounds in terms of wars. I could be wrong about that, but that's from high school, AP history in high school.
So I know some things about Teddy Roosevelt. I know, like, he introduced national parks, and I know that he was shot. Wasn't he shot?
I think that might be Jackson that was shot, but maybe Roosevelt was shot as well.
Or was it McKinley who was shot? I know McKinley got killed. He died. He was shot and killed.
Jackson was, you know, in a duel, and he carried the fragments of the
bullet
in his body. But I'm assuming there's various presidents that have been shot, evidently.
Reagan was shot.
JFK, of course.
Yeah, let's keep going with this.
Lincoln, there's a lot
of Garfield
them.
Shot? Check that out, Ryan. I think Garfield it was.
The cat or the...
No, Garfield, the president.
Oh, sorry.
I think he
this
was
This is
shot.
Not my area of expertise.
Yeah. Well, I actually really like history, but I don't...
Yeah.
Let me get into this a little bit. First of all, your roles. Like, I know people have talked to you about this. When I think of a role, a Crispin Glover role, besides, of course, George McFly, I think of Andy Warhol in The Doors.
Yeah.
I think of that. Like, that role was to the point where I thought, as much as I thought Jim Morrison was playing the lead role,
yeah,
I thought Andy Warhol was in the movie. That is how good you were.
The funny thing is I met
like
Andy
like 4 years before, unbeknownst yeah. that you were going to be, right? And it was at Sean Penn and Madonna's
right.
wedding, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. And I literally stood back after I talked to him, thinking he would be a good person to play, and watched how he held himself and kind of thought about
Wait,
it.
So you're sort of like gearing up for maybe playing him
yeah.
someday
yeah.
before you even know you have the role.
That's right. I mean, so when I heard that the role in this film, I had a nice meeting with Oliver Stone for Platoon. I didn't read or anything. We just sat and talked, and I wasn't in the movie, but I had a good meeting with him. So my agents contacted him. I went in and auditioned, and I got it.
Did you wear a wig and glasses and everything?
No. I went in without that. But I held myself in the way that I had seen Warhol holding himself. So I really had done... in-person research.
Did he ever give you direction on, you know, I could see Oliver doing tons of takes, and I could see, but with what you did, I think he was like, just let him go.
He had an interesting way of dealing with it. He, just early on, before we shot, he said something to the effect of, you know, there are people that know Warhol, and you can know what he's like, so you'd better be good.
You didn't get nervous about that?
No, I like very much working with him. I don't mind that kind of direct thing. I mean, I didn't feel like he was being mean or condescending. He was just being frank, and he was right. Of course, I totally agree with that.
Was there anything you added that he was like, oh my God?
No. In fact, I asked to subtract things, which he did nicely. Like, Paul Williams was in the scene with me.
Yeah.
And I had a funny thing because... It's one of the rare things I remember in my childhood. I went and saw Phantom of the Paradise, which he was in. I don't know what my age was. It was when it came out. So I was relatively young. And it's the only time I can really think of myself where I saw the... it was at Warehouse Records in Westwood. There were pictures, you know, his album was up not too long after that movie. And of course, he was playing a bad character, a villain in that movie. And I remember looking at the thing at the albums, and this is a very bad man. that's the only time I really mixed that up. I was pretty young, and I told this to Paul Williams when I was working with him. Of course, he laughed, but he was given. They originally had me saying the line. It was written for my character as Andy Warhol to say. In the future, everybody will be famous for 15 minutes, which to me felt a little bit too on the nose just at this moment when he's meeting Jim Morrison. So I suggested I don't say that. And then that they had Paul Williams saying, which was much better. So
right, because if you said that, it might take away from your little relation, the little moment in the movie.
Yeah, I just felt like the less said, the better, if possible. And Oliver Stone was very accommodating. He was nice.
What is the moment when, is it Jim Morrison or, you know, Val Kilmer obviously takes your glasses off, was it?
Yeah, there's something I'm talking about, the telephone. I actually don't remember myself, but something about talking to God. I'm forgetting what the line
they
was.
They say, if you want to talk to God or something.
Something like that.
And then, right, did he take off your glasses and you kind of yes. seem shy? And there was so much going on in
yeah.
that, just that little moment.
Yeah, it was
I remembered. It was just yeah. so genius. Was that improvised where he took the glasses?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. I'm pretty sure Val
just took the glasses off.
I think
off.
He did, yeah.
Were you like... Did you love it?
Yeah, he's a good actor. You know, he was into staying in character and such, and so he had an intensity to what he was doing. Where I think I'm I'm all for that. I think it's a good thing to do. Sometimes people get irritated if somebody does it. It certainly doesn't bother me. Personally, for me, what the most important thing is to keep concentration internally in my own head. I would feel like if I did something that annoyed somebody, I would end up being more concerned about that, which would take away from my concentration. So I don't want to like stay in character to the detriment of the performance. If it's a theater game, you know, if it's something where the director wants everybody to stay in character and everybody's on that same level, I actually do think it's a very good way to work. But for me, if I'm imposing it onto others, I would get concerned about people being annoyed by it. So I do think it's a very good way to work, but I don't specifically do that. I just try to concentrate in my own head because that's the most important.
Okay, thing. What's ridiculous right now is I assumed that you were like a method actor. The guy on set that just doesn't talk to anybody. He's so like in the role.
Well, I mean, the concentration is the important thing.
How do you do that? Talk to me about that.
But you know, like that word method is a kind of overused term because that specifically was coined by Strasberg.
Right.
And Strasberg and Uta Hagen and
Stanislavski.
They're all based on Stanislavski. So Stanislavski, if you read his books, he's the best person to read books about acting. His stuff is great. But like if you look at any of those other Stella Adler, they've taken essentially sections of Stanislavski books and made that
absolutely
their whole thing.
Absolutely.
So the fact that Strasberg coined the term the method, I think actually much of what he is specifically teaching, I didn't study Strasberg. I studied other Stanislavski elements, and there were even elements that I studied that had to do with his. But he teaches his emotional recall, which is slightly different than staying in character. I'm not certain that I know of anybody necessarily teaching it like it's kind of being practiced. So when people are saying a method actor, this idea of staying in character, I do think it's good. There was one thing I did early on where the director did want me to do it. And so I did on set.
What was that for?
It was a short film called The Orkley Kid.
Oh yeah. Well, that's where you end up in a dress.
I play a fellow who wants to,
Olivia Newton-John.
Olivia Newton-John. And what had happened, I went to the same, one of the schools, acting schools I went to was one that Sean Penn had gone to. And which was interestingly how I did end up getting that part, but it was just because there was somebody that was doing catering on the short film that went in, and they told me about. Then I went in for it. As I recall, that's what happened. But in any case, he had done the first year version of it, which was shot on video. I did the second year version, and it was based on a documentary that the filmmaker had made. So when Sean Penn did it, he was insisting in staying in character, and the director thought it was good. It was good. And so then he asked me to do it. So I was all for it. And it was good. It was helpful. I liked it. But I had one brief experience on a different film where I tested that, but because it wasn't something that was called on, I felt like it could confuse people.
Sure.
And I just didn't want to continue that. I thought it's best to keep it in my own head. But in terms of the word method, to me, what they're really referring to is Stanislavskian psychological truth, which definitely that's what I was taught and I'm into. I just, it's an overused term.
You know what I always say, whatever, if you're an actor, it's what you're comfortable, what works for you. And for me, it's like when I heard all these things, we had to read all the Uta Hagens and the read about Strasberg and what their teachings. And I was like, oh, I like what he did there. I like what he's talking about there in that chapter.
Sure.
Oh, I like what Stanislavski said about that. Oh, Uta Hagen made it. So it's kind of like a little bit of everything.
Sure, of course.
It's kind of like a little smorgasbord.
Well, and if you read the books by Stanislavski, those have all of the things in it.
Yeah.
So that's really why he's the best.
Do you have a lot of celebrity friends?
I have I do, but I do stay to myself a fair amount. I'm not overly social. I travel a lot. I own property in the Czech Republic. That's where I have a film that I've been working on for many years that I'll have out next year that I developed for myself and my father to act in together.
Right.
And my father and I've never acted together before this. My father's Bruce Glover. He's right. In films like Diamonds Are Forever and Chinatown. But
the villain, right?
He was, in Diamonds Are Forever, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, he was Mr. Wint, I believe.
Is he proud of you?
Yes.
Did you have a childhood where, you know, you'd look at you, your career, from an outsider's point of view, and you go, I wonder if he had a crappy childhood. I wonder if it's just dysfunction, because he's plays these weird characters and this, and he's like, so I bet, you know, he was just like, his mom was an alcoholic and his dad beat him.
No, I actually came from a good household, and I went to a very good private school.
So you were loved?
Absolutely.
Did they say, Crispin, I love you?
Yeah, they did.
You are so good. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. Luckily, I did come from a good household.
That makes me
so
happy.
I mean, you know, there's everybody has little things that they can complain about.
Were you picked on?
No. That's an interesting thing, because I played characters,
sure.
A lot of characters. But no, I really never had any, you know, I was never... beaten or hit or anything.
Good for you.
I mean, I went to a private school from first to ninth grade called Merman School.
On
Mulholland Drive, which was a really great school. I'm grateful I got to go there. I did go to 2 years, 3 years of public high school. 2 years was in Venice High School. And then the last year, you're allowed to go to any public school, at least at the time in the LA system. And I knew more people that went to Beverly. Some had gone to Merman. I was friends with an actor that I'd worked with in something. They had a good drama department. So the last year I went to Beverly High School.
Do you ever talk to Sean Penn?
I ran into him a couple of years ago.
I mean, you're at his wedding. You figure you keep in touch with someone who isn't your what? You know.
Well, I'm not like in regular. I don't have his telephone number or anything. But anytime I see him, I'll talk to him, and he's always
what do you talk
nice.
About?
The last time I saw him, I actually talked to him about something having to do with the Oakley Kid. I'm always complimentary. I like his work, and I feel friendly with him.
Is there anyone you worked with that you were just like?
No, I'm pretty. For me, with actors, it's like, even if somebody is not in a good mood or whatever, I just feel like whatever they have to do, I do think acting's hard. It's like I'm a filmmaker as well,
right.
And that it's a different kind of hard work. It's true, but the psychological aspects of acting, it is difficult in a interpersonal day-to-day work. You have to go into this one realm of a different psychology and then another realm of interrelating with people. So I can understand where if somebody's kind of in their own zone, so to speak, I'm very
respectful.
More than willing to whatever they have to do to make their work is fine with me.
Did you ever not get it in a moment where you're like, you're in a scene and you can't get it?
Who?
You as an actor.
Me?
Yeah. Where you're just like, I don't know what to do here. I don't know what the director wants. I can't get it. I feel like I'm not doing the job.
Well, I mean, when I was 16, I did a pilot. I was playing the page, you know, not having the proper subtext of the character. And the writing wasn't very good. Even to this day, it's embarrassing to me. There's one scene I auditioned with an improvisation. I had learned to act essentially with improvisation technique as opposed to humor. I was very comfortable with improvisation, and I got it from a cattle call, and I did an improvisation. They utilized the improvisation, or a kind of, they changed it a little bit, what I had auditioned for in the show. That scene was fine, although it was changed from what I initially did, but it was essentially fine. But the other things that they wrote were really pretty.
And did you know it then? This isn't good?
Well, yes, but not in the way that I would now. So it was like I just kind of did what I felt like I was expected to do. But I could kind of feel that. So I'm sure I felt like, oh, is this good? But then, you know, I was in acting class at the time, and people, you know, said things that were helpful, you know, in the school, like about playing the page. And I recognized there quickly thereafter that it was very important to get into the psychology underneath. So that's something I always try to do. But I mean, I of course, I'm still capable of making mistakes.
Yeah.
And sometimes I can think that I'm doing something correctly. It's very rare that that happens, but it has happened. And then I realize after, oh, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
That's rare, but it has happened.
You know, I always think, like, you know, George McFly, I know you've done this a million times. You've talked about this a million times, but it's just something that, how do you come up with that? It's Oscar worthy. It's to me, it's so good. And so, like, what actor would play it like that? That the choices you make are choices of, like, what risk? What, it's so terrifying.
The funny thing is it really is so long ago now, and I've not gone to see it since it came out. So I actually don't particularly remember. I'm glad you're saying these things, but I really
don't. You think so, Ryan?
I mean, I remember liking it. It was a great part, and I remember I did work hard on it. I made very specific choices that were very detailed. And
Zemeckis loved them.
Well, not necessarily. He did in a way, but he wasn't always complimentary of it. It was actually a little bit strange, but some of it, it's stuff that I'm writing about in this book as well. There was an actor that was fired from it.
Eric Stoltz.
And I think there was a certain amount of tension, perhaps, that was brewing, because they perhaps were, well, obviously they did do that. They would know that something was up without relaying it to everybody else, but at the same time, you could feel it. But
was that hard for you? Did you like Eric a lot?
Eric also went to the same acting school that I went to. He and I had played brothers in a Bayer aspirin commercial when I was 16. So I knew him. Like I say, I'll go into more detail about it in the book. But there you have the Uta Hagen respect.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, I have.
Dude, how do you see that? I have contacts in, and I can't even see you.
Well, my right eye is quite sharp, and my left eye have an astigmatism.
Yeah,
but I've good eyesight.
But back to George for one moment. I know, because we're going to get into Lucky Day, because it looks badass. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, I had a great time playing
that. Oh, yeah, I can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah.
Did you ever take risks that you remember, specific risks that Zemeckis was like, no, don't do that?
No, he liked me. I actually did have a good working relationship with Robert Zemeckis. I liked working with Robert Zemeckis. There were sometimes things that, I was talking about. Maybe I wasn't talking about it in this interview. I've been doing a number of interviews, but sometimes a director, you'll have to translate into your own head what they're really meaning to say. Sometimes a director will just say, you know, something that's not in actorly terms, so to speak.
So you don't understand it exactly. It's not that clear.
It's clear, but it's just you have to kind of retranslate it so that it can become an organic thing,
right?
As opposed to an external thing. But ultimately, he is a very good director, and gave me good directions. I also worked with him on when I played Grendel as well, and he gave me a very specific direction on that.
Beowulf.
In Beowulf, which is actually related to Lucky Day.
Yeah, because Roger Avery was a writer on that.
He co-wrote it with Neil Gaiman.
Right.
And I'm working with Neil Gaiman right now on American Gods, which is based on his beautiful book of the same title.
Right.
And he's the executive producer for that show. And then Zemeckis he read the script. It was written originally for Roger Avery to direct Beowulf. And then Zemeckis got hold of it and he wanted to direct it. So he paid Roger for the script. And he said to Roger and Neil that he would cast who they wanted to cast in it. And so I was who they wanted to have play Grendel. And so I'm grateful to Roger and Neil.
And he's got a long list of amazing credits. Like he wrote, co-wrote with Tarantino in a lot of films, right?
Roger Avery, yeah. He co-wrote
Reservoir Dogs
and Pulp Fiction, which he won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay with
So when he
Tarantino
called you for this, it was a no-brainer?
Let me just finish the other story. So then I was, you know, there had been the lawsuit about Back to the Future, or the sequel, rather. And so it's the kind of thing where you think, well, I'm never going to end up working with any of those people again. So be it. That's how it would be. So the fact that that ended up happening, I owe to Roger and Neil. And I am glad that it happened. It was reparative for me. Not totally. But I mean, I did have a good working relationship with Robert Zemeckis on Beowulf, and I did ultimately on Back to the Future as well. Unfortunately, you know, the things that happened after, that's too bad, but at least there was a reparative element. So, yeah, when I got the script from Roger, the character itself was great, so I absolutely wanted to.
And it's got some gore. The trailer alone.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm just going to be honest. This interview just happened late yesterday, so I didn't have time to watch the movie.
That's all right. Yeah.
But this is my genre, man. This is when I watch it, you're always hoping something's going to be good because it's easier to talk about.
Sure.
And then I see this trailer and you've got this accent.
Yes.
And they're like, he's got this French accent. He's not even French.
Yes.
And it's got this humor, but it's got this grit and this craziness and this intensity. And then you see Roger, directed it and wrote it. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I'm actually haven't seen it myself. I'm going to see it tonight.
Really?
Yeah. But I had the
offer. Sure, I'll go with you.
Sure, if you want to go, you're welcome to go. I had the opportunity to either watch it on my computer or go to Lionsgate and see it, but I kind of thought this is a movie. It does have humor and there's a visceral quality, and I feel like it'll get audience reaction, so it'll be a fun film to go see in the movie theater. So I'll go see it at the Wilshire. What is it called? The music hall tonight,
right?
At 7:00.
But it's also
going to
play in selected theaters, and it's going to play on video on demand.
Yes, yeah, that's
and so you guys could find this for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Check are we live or recorded?
It's recorded. Okay, yeah, this was live. Oh my god, that'd be kind of cool. Could we do that, Ryan?
Do like a live radio show?
Oh my god, I'd love to do live, like Stern.
Right. I have no idea how these things happen, but people do it. I have been in various. You know, I'm very glad that this kind of home type talking, because it's much more the way people actually talk. There's just something that happens when you're sitting in somebody's room.
You start to forget about all the crap. That's why, you know, a lot of people are like, what happened? Because we used to shoot in video. And I'm like, I don't know. People are just more intimate. The conversation is more open when you're just two people talking.
Definitely.
You know, sorry about sometimes I'm taking pictures and stuff, but hopefully it wasn't that distraction.
No, I'm on both at the same time. I mean, I know that it's
happening
but it does give a, you know, I've been on those late night talk shows, which are the most unnatural form of conversation. They're, you know, predetermined. You have the pre-interview.
You have 5 minutes.
Or less. It's
speaking of which,
strange.
Why did you bring that up?
What?
One of the most, you know, your publicist didn't even know about this. I was like, well, you know, the Letterman thing.
Right.
Ryan, you know about the Letterman thing?
Yeah, I just heard about it today.
Because I told you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I...
It was for a role, right? There was a...
Well,
was go ahead. You tell us.
Well, okay. So I'm writing this book also for many different reasons. And...
To set the record straight?
Well, the thing is, what I've said in media to date in public media is I neither confirm nor deny that I was on the Letterman show. So, of course, you know, it has a humor to it. But there are reasons that I do that. If you go into details, like similar with the Back to the Future stuff, I actually did not want to talk about that. I've actually always planned to write stuff out about it. The only reason that I started talking about it was because Bob Gale specifically was lying. He was saying that I asked for the same salary as Michael J. Fox. It's total fabrication. But it was designed and calculated to make me look bad. Again, he stole something from me. He's blaming the person that he stole from for stealing from them. It's blaming the victim. It's what criminals do. And he did something that was illegal. He won't take the ownership of his illegal activity. And he blames me for his illegal activity.
Right.
It's really not right. I did not really want to talk about Back to the Future stuff, because there's really a lot to it. And if you take a little bit out of context, which I knew would happen, people start attacking about one thing or another. I've always meant to write it all through so you can really see the perspective of what I was thinking about and doing things, because there was always very specific reasons. Similarly with the Letterman thing, I've already written that part out. It's very specific about the reality of whether I can deny or confirm that I was on the Letterman show. But what people think is not what it is. But it will be
so
very
you're
clear.
Saving that for the book.
It's
so
just
to speak.
It just
can you give me a taste?
It's not just saving it for the book. It's just that if you start to go into a little bit of detail, it's the classic can of worms. It just you can't really pack it in quickly. It needs to be done justice.
Sure.
Properly.
Well, answer me this, maybe.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
Were you concerned and upset that maybe fuck, man, Letterman, the king of fucking late night. I feel bad. This sucks because it was my one chance on Letterman. Now he hates me. He's never going to let me go
well,
on there.
I've been on the Letterman show multiple times.
There was
the first time. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I neither confirm nor deny. you caught me. But I neither confirm nor deny that I was on the Letterman show. However, there were multiple appearances that I neither confirm or deny.
Do you like Letterman?
I do like David Letterman.
Does he like you?
I don't know about that, but no, I he's okay. I don't think he hates me. No, I don't think he hates me.
What do you want people to know about you? If they think you're this, like we talked about earlier, and you know this guy, and he's just, is he weird? Is he this? He plays these intense roles. He's such a good actor. He's a method. What do you want them to know about you?
Well, you know, my initial plan when I started acting was to not do any promotion for anything at all. I didn't have a want for becoming a public persona, so to speak. I just kind of liked the idea of being an actor that would play different characters, that I would show up and people wouldn't know really what that person was like. Like, I didn't do any publicity for Back to the Future. It was only after River's Edge came out. And because Back to the Future had been the prior movie to that, there was a fair amount of interest in me to promote the film River's Edge, which I was proud of. So I did end up doing promotion for River's Edge. But once you do that, you're in it. And that was when I really kind of made a splash, so to speak, that I can neither confirm nor deny.
You always work.
Do I always work?
I mean, you always work.
Oh, well,
you can work as much or as little as you want. Is that true?
No, it's not totally true. I work. There are times I turn things down if I can afford it sometimes. And it's like my taste gets better when I can afford it. And when I can't,
then you're the page.
Say it again.
Then you're the page. You'll have to do the role of the page.
Well, I mean, even then I've learned to try to aspire to get under the page. But it's true. At a certain point, you kind of sink with the ship. You know, there's nothing one can do at a certain point. But you always attempt to get underneath. But again, you know, I make mistakes.
What's your favorite role?
I don't really have a favorite role.
Well, you perked up when I said Andy Warhol because I
did enjoy. I mean, at the same time, even with what Oliver Stone said, I was concerned about that. Just by it's something I think is very difficult for any actor when they're playing somebody that's known. Part of the way somebody is, if they're a known figure, is part of what they're known for. So, and I wouldn't even say I did my face doesn't particularly look like Andy Warhol's face. My nose is very different than his. And I wore a prosthetic nose because his nose indents. So there was a prosthetic that sort of made, but I have a bump in my nose. So
too.
It had to like really be quite prominent. But so there was something put on, you know, I wanted to
do it right.
Say
you wanted to do it right. You wanted it to please the director, please the people who knew him, and also please yourself.
But I'm glad I was the first person in a corporate film to play Andy Warhol. And the reason that I say it is because I researched it a fair amount, and I'd already was interested in Warhol's work even when I met him. But he had sent people for college appearances, or one person, I don't know, to look like him. Of course, it was the 60s, so he was able to send some people without going to the college appearance, and he got paid for it. And then eventually he got caught, and he had to stop doing that. But I always thought that was really funny, actually.
Jesus.
But so other people played him, but I believe I'm the first person to have played him in a corporate film.
I don't think anybody's played him better.
Well, there have been good people that have played him.
I can't remember.
Like David Bowie played him in Basquiat, and he played him at a different time period.
Yeah.
I was playing him in the 60s, and he was playing him in the 80s during interview, and I thought he caught something very interesting. And, of course, he did know Andy Warhol, so I thought he caught something very interesting. There have been a lot of people that played him that I thought some people naturally looked more like Warhol than myself or maybe David Bowie as well. But I think a lot of he's an interesting character, so there's been interesting takes on him.
Well, look, I love your work.
Well, thank you.
I'm honored to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
And I hope, look, anytime you want to talk, you have a platform.
Oh, well, thank you.
And seriously, I know you're very passionate about all the things that you're writing about and doing, and I think that's brilliant, and it's brave. So it's very brave to go to do what you're doing, and I think you need a lot of, you need some brave people out there. So,
well, I appreciate it. I try my best.
now, with a compliment, I'm gonna ask you one more Back to the Future question.
Okay.
I mean, this is a movie that you know that, like, I'm almost as old as you, by the way. You're a young guy. You're 54. I'm like 47.
Yeah. Actually, I'm 55. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was helping you there.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well. It's easily known. I don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's
it
on
too
Wikipedia
much.
And all that stuff.
Aging is inevitable. I attempt to age gracefully.
Do you use moisturizer? Because you have really supple, soft skin. I mean, it is.
Well, I thank you.
Good hair?
I sometimes put coconut oil on my face, but that's about it. I try to eat healthfully. That's
what do you
the
eat?
Main thing.
You're sort of a vegan, right?
At my healthiest, I'll eat raw vegan. Right now I'm eating cooked vegan. It's better if I eat raw vegan. Sometimes I'll eat fish. Otherwise I try to avoid animal products, but
do you exercise?
I exercise.
You hike?
Yeah. No, I work out at the gym or ride the bicycle. Sometimes yoga.
Do people come up to you and say, "Hey, Chris McGlover," a lot.
Yeah.
You get it all the time.
Yes. Yeah. All the time.
And you're nice about it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are you gonna
do? The only thing that I've only recently stopped doing, and I think I mentioned it a minute
the
ago.
Signing.
I've stopped doing that. I will only do that at my shows.
You know, Steve
now.
Martin, you know what he did? If somebody goes, can I
have your... He gave him a Pride and Joy card or something?
Something like that. They would say, you're Steve Martin. Can I get a picture, an autograph? No, but you could have this card.
That's right, a
and
card.
And it says, you met Steve Martin.
Yeah, that's right.
And I always love that.
Why am I thinking Pride and Joy?
I don't know.
Somebody had a Pride and Joy. I don't know what that is.
I'm not big enough of an actor to have a card. You met Michael Rosenbaum. Who gives
a
shit?
No, the fastest thing to do is, everybody, of course, has a phone now, and everybody wants a picture. So that's fast.
Right.
I don't mind doing that. That's just the easiest thing. thing to do. Smile, say hello, etc. And that's easy. It's actually much more difficult for the signatures. So,
you know, for the Back to the Future, I just keep thinking of some of these lines, like the very famous line, the "Hey Biff, get your damn hands off her."
Yeah, yeah.
And I just could see Zemeckis laughing back behind his camera going, "Yes," and you're just surprising him with these takes and these, just, are you stretching it out? Are you milking it? I just want a moment where you remember where you just, they're letting you go.
No, as I recall, that was a night shoot and it went quite smoothly. Some things we had to reshoot because there was about, I think it was 5 weeks of shooting. I was about to be done when they fired Eric Stoltz. So then we had quite a bit of reshooting to do. I can't remember if there was anything in that sequence that we reshot or not. There may have been,
but is there a moment where you are in the moment, you say something, and you just know, oh my God, by everyone's reaction, I'm fucking good.
It really was a strange shoot in that way. I mean, Zemeckis did like me, but it wasn't an overly effusive kind of complimentary set.
Don't actors need that? Don't you need to go, oh my God, the whole crew loves it. Oh God, hey, Crispin, do you want to take more of a beep when you say, hey, Biff?
There were times that, there was one thing that's not in the film that I remember we did that was much more of a visual gag, but it was much more broad than was in the style of the film.
What was it? What was it?
It was a visual gag, and as I recall, I was like in between a bed, and my body was up high, and there was like somebody else's feet were bent, so it was like I was bent backwards in half. It was an impossible look. I think I suggested it, but and people laughed on the set, but it wasn't in the style of the film. I don't even remember why I suggested that, and it wasn't something that was normally suggested. But people did laugh when it happened. But I even know it wouldn't have been.
It just didn't fit.
But it was something we actually shot, as I recall, and I remember people laughing. Actually, that was the thing. I remember people laughing, but it was a strange thing.
Keep going with that. You were thinking you had that vision.
There was a moment when I'm sitting in front of the television set, and my character's laughing, although I had a different interpretation of the purpose of the laugh than how it was represented in the film. It wasn't just a silly laugh. There was a purpose behind it. It actually had a lot more pathos to it. But I don't think Zemeckis quite understood that. Well, I know because of how it ended up being presented. But I do remember people laughing at that.
Was that something you just came up with, that laugh?
Well, it served a different purpose than it comes off in the film, because what I'd said to Zemeckis was there should be something on television that's not funny, kind of just mundane, and that the laugh is the character trying to get out of mundanity. And I was not aware of the Honeymooners. For whatever reason, it didn't play on the local stations. Now I'm aware of it. It's a great show, and it is really funny. So it didn't fit with it looks like I'm really just laughing at a funny show. I had suggested that I was laughing at something that was mundane.
Right.
Like I was trying to bring joy into a mundane situation. But nonetheless, people were laughing at the laugh.
And you just came up with that laugh.
Yeah, I don't think I came up with it on the set. I think I prepared it. I did work hard in advance in preparation for it. I'm sure sometimes, you know, nuances and that kind of thing were on set, but I'm quite certain I prepared that. That wasn't just on the moment. But at the same time, probably, you know, the nuance of various take-to-take, of course, would be differentiated from whatever was going on at the time. But there was a fair amount of preparation.
This is, this is, look, this is amazing. I'm not going to keep you any longer. The Lucky Day is out.
Yes.
You're gonna watch that, guys. Listen, it's watch the trailer. You're going to have a great time with this. What a great character. I want to see more of them.
It was a great character. And this was one that I could sink my teeth into.
You're perking up again.
Yeah.
I could see it. Now you're happy again.
Yeah, yeah. No, it really was a good character. And I really enjoyed working with Roger. And I'm interested to see what people think. I feel like people will enjoy it. I mean, you never know, but I enjoyed playing it, and I'll go see it in just a few hours. Maybe I'll hate it. I don't think so, though. I think I'm going to enjoy it.
Lucky Day is out. Go check it out. This is Crispin Glover. Thank you for allowing me to be inside
Thank
of you,
you.
Today.
I
this has been
it.
So much fun. And are you on Instagram or any of that?
Yes, I'm on all these things. There's a CrispinGlover.com. People can sign up for the newsletter.
Yes.
Let's it be known when I'm touring. I know I already have a show in January in San Francisco on the 15th at the Castro. But which is part of something called the Sketch Fest. But people can sign up for the newsletter. I'm Crispin Hellion Glover on Instagram, Crispin Hellion Glover on Facebook. There's also an official Crispin Hellion Glover on Facebook. And then I'm Crispin Glover on Twitter. So I have all those basics.
This is a real joy, an honor to have you here. I hope you
had
a good time.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.